Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 16, Number 8. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was cortisol, king of catabolism. Although excessive cortisol release can work against our health and fitness objectives, cortisol plays an important role in endocrine chemistry and hormonal homeostasis. Cortisol provides powerful anti-inflammatory benefits. Based on the evolutionary model, cortisol developed as a survival mechanism. When stimulated, it breaks down fat reserves and muscle for emergency fuel and reduces swelling in the event of injury. This is great for basic survival and also great for athletic training. However, like many other hormones, cortisol is a two-edged sword. High cortisol levels can dampen and reduce growth hormone output, suppress the immune system, and destroy any natural biological desire one might have for sex. In other words, it decreases libido. Elevated cortisol has also been implicated as a causative factor in substance abuse, smoking, alcoholism, anorexia nervosa, impairment of memory, and age-related neuronal damage. Insulin sensitivity is reduced during the release of cortisol. Chronic stress results in insulin resistance and increased levels of circulating insulin. And we know that high levels of insulin promote fat storage around the gut and internal organs. If you're overtraining, chronically ill, stressed out mentally, anxiety prone, or someone who adapts to stress by overeating, chances are you've most likely got elevated cortisol levels. To reduce serum levels of cortisol, try moderate to high doses of the following nutrients: melatonin, phosphatidylserine, vitamin C, vitamin E, HMB, CLA, whey peptides, GABA, and acetyl L-carnitine. I take most of these supplements myself. Some of them I take routinely year-round, and others I add in from time to time. As a competitive hammer thrower, I need all the biological support, believe me, that I can find. Remember the CHI prime directive: supply your biological demand. On this edition of Clinical Review, my topic is PSN number 37, functional foods. Functional foods are an emerging field of science due to their increasing popularity by health-conscious consumers. So what is a functional food? Well, if you Google functional food, here's how it's listed in Wikipedia, and I quote, "Functional food or medicinal food is any healthy or functional food claimed to have a health-promoting or disease-preventing property beyond the basic function of supplying nutrients. The general category of functional food includes processed food or foods fortified with health-promoting additives like vitamin-enriched products or fermented foods with live cultures," end quote. Initial research on functional food centered on the health benefits conveyed by specific foods such as soybeans, garlic, red wine, and fortified foods. We've all heard about resveratrol, for example, the phenol derived from grape skins present in red wine that, when isolated in high concentration, has been shown to increase life expectancy in rats or reduce inflammation in human trials. Whole food came first. A lot of research has been given and dedicated to this area. And from this research, we discover that there are certain nutrients that are unique to certain foods. So we identify specific whole food components, such as lutein, probiotics, prebiotics, flavonoids, anthocyanidins, lycopene, and omega-3 fatty acids. Functional foods, in theory, are a marriage of the two. The synergy of both, when combined, is said to generate outcomes not possible with one or the other. Now, you've got to be careful here, because just because it's classified as a functional food by convention doesn't mean that it's beneficial. For example, you can take a heavily refined, sterile, dead food and market it as a functional food because you've added vitamin D or calcium. There's a ton of error mixed with a little truth on television. But at the same time, you can take an incredibly powerful, nutritious food and bump it up with any number of specific micronutrients, alkaloids, or polyphenols. For example, I think we should genetically enhance our food with life-giving essential micronutrients that are biologically compatible with our species. And of course, extensive safety research should be done prior to consuming it. But no one single food is going to stop the aging process in its tracks. It's what we put inside every day in totality that counts. It's everything that we do and don't do that determines the outcome of our overall health. The number of variables that directly affects our health is mind-boggling. I listened to a tutorial recently that criticized studies based on mice that are genetically altered to be diabetic at birth. The author said that any research derived from such studies is flawed, as such data does not take into account the principle of individual biochemistry, and as it relates to humans, human variation. For example, if we put 100 humans in a room, all diagnosed with diabetes type 2, and went back through their history individually in detail, we would discover that the road that led each one of them to becoming a diabetic was absolutely unique and involved hundreds of thousands, perhaps even millions of variables and food choices, including the effects of environment and their thought life. We want food to be nutritious and whole, and we do know that adding nutrients to food in the form of vitamins can accessorize the food and make it even more nutritious. So I'm all for this. However, what I'm against is what convention typically does. And for the most part, convention produces and markets garbage food for humans that, in fact, is illegal to feed to zoo animals. People are intentionally misled into thinking that functional junk food, that's what I call it, is acceptable to eat if it's endowed with special micronutrient or botanical phytochemicals. Conventional advertising works by deception. They focus on the perceived benefits and then completely disregard the facts. Good examples include bleached white flour or breakfast cereals enriched with vitamins and minerals of the lowest, cheapest synthetic quality. Now, you can't convert something detrimental or poisonous on its own into something beneficial by adding a slurry of vitamins or minerals. Yes, you might be able to prevent one of the classic diseases like scurvy or beriberi, but you can never optimize functional health with this approach. The purpose of food is to optimize the mind and body to supply energy and essential micronutrients as efficiently as possible. To do that, you need fresh, whole, organic, real food. Another good example of a false flag functional food is these so-called sports drinks and vitamin waters on the market. They're loaded with sugar and a host of chemicals not listed on the label. The truth is, they're all hazardous to our health. Choose beverages that are sucrose, fructose, and sugar-free. And right away, you're in an entirely different category because the makers of those beverages are usually much more health conscious. Consumers are frequently beguiled by marketing hype, pictures, and fancy labels that glitter in the sun like fool's gold. The hype only serves as a distraction that helps remove any need for further thought or investigation. There's a saying that goes something like this: a strong man cannot make a weak man stronger. The weak man has to make himself stronger. So in a similar way, a strong substance, such as a nutrient, a nutraceutical, a totally legit vitamin or mineral, cannot make a weak food stronger. The food that the nutrient or nutraceutical has been added to doesn't change, and this is what we have to evaluate. The real question is this: what is the value of the food in question without any fortification? Can it stand alone by reason of its effect on health? Now, I certainly like the idea of adding thiamine to alcohol to minimize the risk of alcoholism, or adding magnesium to public drinking water to minimize the risk of cardiovascular disease. There's evidence to support that approach. All rules have exceptions. In fact, it is the exception itself that led to the formation of the rules. There are countless examples of vitamins and minerals and botanical extracts that could be utilized to the benefit of humanity on a large scale at marginal costs to prevent death and morbidity. Think of the lives we could save through better nutrition. But it has to be done right for the right reasons. With the advance of nutritional genomics, it's now possible to design foods and diets to regulate gene expression, change metabolism, and thus prevent specific diseases to which an individual is prone. As a result, the ability to tailor diets to meet specific needs and health goals will become more highly individualized, and this is a good thing. And so are functional foods. As long as we keep a sharp eye out for quality, know our food chemistry, and understand what the impact of whatever food we have in question will be on our health in the future. Let's all learn to rely on the power of predictive medicine. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from the last words of Blackfoot warrior Crowfoot. What is life? It is the flash of a firefly in the night. It is the breath of a buffalo in the wintertime. It is the little shadow which runs across the grass and loses itself in the sunset.